Hello, boys and girls. Welcome in to the Boys and Girl Podcast with Cowboys NFL Network reporter Jane Slater and NFL Network producer Bobby Belt. A Cowboys community with the inside scoop on the Dallas Cowboys. Now, coming straight to you from the Lone Star State, here's Jane and Bobby.
All right, Bobby, it feels like forever ago since we last saw the Cowboys out in the football field. Of course, an embarrassment on Thursday Night Football against the Bears. And what was frustrating about that was it was coming off a week where Jerry had walked back so much of the tough talk, hoping that this team would right the ship, write that story, and the story and the narrative remains. Maybe this team just isn't good enough, despite the fact that it's 6-7, a putrid record of the season. They could still get into the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think that it's honestly the most disappointing aspect of this is that they are still in playoff contention. And so it does kind of feel like, you know, maybe this would you'd be easier for you to move on from some of these things, and you could justify making some of these changes quicker if you weren't in such a terrible division. A division that now, with the Eagles just barely squeaking by against the Giants on Monday Night Football, is now tied. And you've got the Eagles and the Cowboys sitting here at 6-7, and you know, you've got the chance of a below 500 division winner with either Dallas or Philadelphia. And so it's this game coming up against the Rams. It definitely matters for the Cowboys' playoff hopes. It's not completely irrelevant, but I mean, the game is going to be Week 16 against the Eagles. This is where it's all kind of building towards. And the question is, are they going to get bounced and quickly embarrassed, and we'll have this all over? It'll be like pulling off a Band-Aid, or is this going to drag a little bit, and maybe we get some false hope for Jerry about his head coach, and he has a change of heart after seeing him make a little bit of a run? But I think overall, I think everybody, especially after that Bears game, three straight losses, I think everybody's feeling like this has reached its conclusion. We've come to an end of the Jason Garrett era. It's just waiting for the clock to run out.
It is painful to watch. It's almost like this thing is on life support.
Yeah.
And you almost just want to pull the plug. You know, it's painful to watch for a few reasons. You have to wonder if maybe a change of voice, a team rallying together, you know, maybe that would force this locker room to find the chemistry that they're seemingly missing right now. But you also feel like Jason Garrett's the dead man walking. And it's hard to do these press conferences. It's hard to watch it. As I've reported, we know that there is a search of some sorts, at least, yeah, going on behind the scenes. The Cowboys are doing their due diligence.
Well, and like you said, you had mentioned a couple weeks ago that, and I know you didn't want to get into too many details, but you made mention that, you know, they did a little bit of a cursory homework job after the Rams playoff game. So, yeah, they've been spending time looking at contingency plans. And this is the first time, I think, in the Jason Garrett era that contingencies have really been explored. And it's funny, I don't want to read too much into it, which, you know, I'm guilty of reading too much into things.
You are good at that.
But I do, it has felt a little bit like even Jason Garrett standing up there, it's almost like he's a little uncomfortable standing up there, and he knows his job is on the line. It feels like everybody's kind of aware where this is heading, and it's just a little awkward right now.
And the mood's different around here. Say what you want. You know, I always appreciate the fact that Dak is pretty matter of fact. Mm-hmm. And he said a few weeks ago, talk is cheap. They said that, though, and it was cheap. It was cheap because the product on the field looked the way that it did against the Bears on Thursday Night Football. And, you know, now you've got a team like the Rams coming in here.
Who are finally putting it together.
Who are finally putting it together.
Just in time for you.
Which is, you know, it's absolutely crazy when you look at what they've been doing as of late. And it was, you know, I actually was on a conference call with Sean McVay talking to the Dallas media today. And he talked about, you know, these are two teams that won their first three, lost their next three. And so they mirrored each other of sorts, but they were able to sort of right the ship. And like the Cowboys, there are dynamics of that team that are different. The cornerbacks are no longer there. The Marcus Peters, the Aqib Talibs, mm-hmm, and no C.J. Anderson. So there are elements of their team that have been missing, but they have been able to turn it around. And most importantly, when you start looking at the way that they've been playing and utilizing a guy like Todd Gurley, you know, you look at his recent stretch of, you know, with 3 wins in 4 games, Gurley against Chicago, Arizona, Seattle, he's really been coming along. In fact, he has a touchdown in each of those games. You look at Zeke too. You look at, you know, Zeke, he went 5 straight games without 100 rushing yards for the first time in his career.
Yeah, that's going back to college and everything.
Which is wild. His long streak before that was 3. And then all of a sudden, what's ironic about him is during this losing stretch, he's now averaging 4.6 yards per carry, these 30-yard runs in back-to-back weeks, longest games of the season. I'm beginning to feel like, is this going to come down to a running game? And if I'm the Rams, this is where I exploit the Cowboys. Because their run defense has been absolutely putrid.
Yeah, the Cowboys, it's 7 straight games they've allowed the opponent to rush for 100 yards on them. And you look at over the last, since the bye week, so since week 9, since they came back and returned from the bye week, I think the Cowboys have allowed the 5th most rushing yards in the NFL. I mean, the run defense has been getting slammed, and that goes back to before Leighton Vander Esch got hurt. Leighton Vander Esch has not been Leighton Vander Esch this year. Jalen Smith has not been Jalen Smith. This entire
DeMarcus Lawrence has not been DeMarcus Lawrence this year.
Yeah.
And then you look at no Tyrone Crawford, Antoine Woods out with the MCL, not having Byron Jones there at time. Jeff Heath wasn't there in the last 2 games. Now, you know, it looks like they're going to get Antoine Woods back in this game, possibly. Looks like they might be getting Jeff Heath, but they need all hands on deck. The Cowboys have given up an average of 25 points in the last 5 games. They've gone from 11th to 19th in run defense, and they're averaging 132.3 rushing yards a game, what they're giving up. And this is because it's not just the running backs that are running on you. This is, guys, the mobile quarterbacks like the Josh Allens, the Mitchell Trubisky's.
You know, they won that game against Detroit by 8 points, and that was Jeff Driskel, who some people felt like wasn't completely prepared to start. And you remember one of the talking points of that game was, why is Jeff Driskel not running? He seems to have all these lanes, and he's not taking advantage. And so the guy who just was a little too timid to run, if that quarterback had run on you like the others had, you may be looking at losing 5 straight. I mean, you cannot seem to stop anybody. And yeah, I don't think the Cowboys need much of a reminder of Jared Goff's ability to kind of move a little bit, because they saw it in the playoff game. That was when they had that 3rd down late in the game, and they, you know, were setting up for a chance to potentially get a punt. You had 3rd and 8, and Jared Goff's able to just bootleg and run free to the outside, pick up the 1st down and end your season. And there's a lot of poetry about where the Cowboys were at the end of that game, and a lot of the soap opera storylines that have gone on since. And then at the end of the day, you're stunned to kind of look at it and realize, because I don't think anybody would have thought this earlier in the year, you are worse than you were after you lost that game to the Rams. And Jerry was steaming mad after they lost that game to the Rams. It was upset.
And you completely reworked your offense as a result of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could argue that Dak Prescott, while he's not had the best, he's been on the stretch here.
He's had a rough three games.
Inconsistent.
Yeah.
You could argue that Dak has been better for it. I don't know if the offense has necessarily been better for it.
No, and there just seems to be so many, it's silly things. The mistakes Dak is making are not the mistake. They're mistakes that seem to be unlike even his rookie year. Like, I don't want to even say he's making rookie mistakes, because he's doing things that he didn't even seem to do in his rookie year, making bad throws or misjudging things. And, you know, you're having focus drops all across the receiving core. You're having, the defense over-pursuing or failing to wrap up tackles. It seems like just really elementary things. And that's why, you know, when you're bad at the basics, that's usually the most direct reflection of how your coaching staff is getting these guys ready. I mean, look, Jason Garrett's done here. I think we agree now. Everybody who yelled at you on Twitter, I think you're in agreement now. Jason Garrett's likely gone now, right?
I think it would be hard to keep him at this point. And like I said, based on the sources that I've been talking to, there has been an ongoing conversation, despite what Jerry Jones said on 105.3 The Fan. And if you missed it, here you go.
Jerry, before we let you go, there was a report from Jane Slater on the NFL Network. Can you confirm that report? There's been a recent meeting between Steven or yourself and Urban Meyer.
That's not correct. I can confirm that it is absolutely not correct.
With you guys,
we have not met with any coach, not met with any specifically why, in answering that question, I don't want to imply that we wouldn't in a way that would diminish the credibility of the or in this case, a player or somebody you're asking about. Normally when somebody says, have you met with such and such? Are you interested in such and such? And you said, I have not. Its implication is you're not interested. That shouldn't be brought forward either. The facts are we just have not talked to any coach, potential coach in the NFL.
Whether they've met, talked with, I don't want to sit here and call Jerry Jones a liar. I think he answered that question quite interestingly, we'll put it that way. But my source maintains that there has at least been a conversation with Urban Meyer about this job, and that there has at least been conversations with other people that would be interesting. Now, call them formal, informal, doing your due diligence. You know, there's a lot of different ways that an organization can characterize conversations.
Oh, I mean,
with persons of interest.
We saw this week that back in October, Odell Beckham has a talk with Jimmy Garoppolo on the field. You know, I'll come play here. Yeah, I got you. I mean, those, even it could be to the extent of just that. But those types of conversations, they go on all the time.
The bottom line is those conversations are happening. And like I said, I've been dropping little nuggets here for you back and forth. There were conversations that were had this summer ahead of Jason Garrett getting his one-year prove-it deal. So,
or just not getting his extension and
right.
having to play on the 1 year, or having to coach
after
on the
Packers loss, Jerry wasn't having it. After the Rams loss, he was mad as hell. He has been on a completely different level of frustration this year, and I believe that's because he's been talking about that window closing forever. And he can physically not keep it open much longer, given the window that he wants to win. And, you know, I did think it was interesting. We've given a lot of, we've criticized Jason Garrett for his inability to fall on the sword. Say this is on me. Pound mm-hmm. his chest. Rod Marinelli told the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, he said, I take full responsibility. Things we are coaching, obviously I'm not emphasizing well enough, and we didn't do it. That's a reflection of me. It's cut and dry. This is what coaching is. Things we needed to get done, it starts with me, nobody else. I take responsibility for this loss. I didn't get it done. Sometimes you think you got to get it done, but obviously I didn't do a good enough job explaining some of the options and stuff. I didn't get it done. It's all me. Rod is one of my favorite coaches around here, and he's my favorite coach not only because of the way that he treats me and other women in this building. He is so big on making sure you're not only good at your job, but good at life.
He is a gentleman. Like, that is the best word for Rod Marinelli. He is a gentleman.
I've developed a relationship with his daughter, who is this tremendous chef in Las Vegas. His wife is adorable. Rod always says hello and gives me words of encouragement at games, and it is no different with the men on defense. I've said that I do this show on Monday nights in downtown Dallas called Inside the Huddle. And every defensive player tells me that that's the one thing they love about Rod. So I respect, and I'm not shocked by the fact that he came out and said this. So look, maybe the players will be motivated by yet another person raising their hand and saying, this is on me. But if they want Marinelli back, if they want Jason Garrett back, they've got to win their remaining three games, Bobby, and they've got to get deep in the playoffs. Again, as Dak Prescott put it, talk is cheap.
Yeah, I think it's important what you just said, that it's not, because they could obviously, like I said, they could finish 7-9 and win their division and still get in the playoffs. And I don't think that's
to
good.
Be these other NFC teams.
I don't think that's good.
In the South, the North, see that.
I think they need to win these final three games. They need to finish above 500. They need to be on a high. They need to get in here and then, you know, perform well in the playoffs. It can't just be win the three and they get bounced. But I think it is important that they finish the regular season strong. They get some good momentum built up. And, you can't – 7-9 won't be the end of the – they could concede blue in a playoff game. In fact, the last two times that you've had a division winner that was below 500, it was the Panthers, who went 7-8-1, I believe, in 2015. And then in 2010, I believe it was, the Seahawks went 7-9. and they beat the 7-9 Seahawks at home, beat the 11-5 Saints and kicked them out of the playoffs, and then the 7-8-1 Panthers beat up on the 11-5 Cardinals and got them out of the playoffs. So,
oh, this is my Rain Man flowing right now, by the way.
It's not the end of the world if you enter the playoffs 7-9, but, you know, let's think back to, you remember they were 8-7 that year Zeke had gotten suspended. They had nothing to play for, and yet they played their starters in Philly in the final game all the way through to the end, 1-6-0. And they talked about,
which was a coaching criticism.
Yeah, and they talked about that it was important to them to finish above 500. Like, even if they weren't going to go to the playoffs, that was an important thing. And I think that needs to be of just as much importance as getting into the playoffs. I don't think you want to go in there 8-8 or 7-9. And even if you were able to somehow manage to sneak away with a victory, I don't think you want to go into these games as, you know, the pathetic little division winner that you had to let in. I think for their confidence and whether or not Jason Garrett is back next year or not, they've got to head into the playoffs as a winning team and then show that they can actually contend in the playoffs.
Well, they made at least one change ahead of this game, Bobby. It wasn't sexy, but it was what people were asking for. Brett Maher, no longer here. He was 20 of 30 this year. We talked about just how abysmal his season has been. He's missed, what was it, 10 kicks this year?
Yeah, 10 kicks this year.
Most in the NFL, most in the last 4 years.
Yeah, and now that he's gone, obviously, he's not here any longer, but Garrett was pretty direct when talking about, you know, the reasons why he was gone. It was just funny how it went from support, and now that he's gone, Garrett being pretty direct. This is actually what he had to say.
We just felt like we needed to make a change at kicker, and like we had talked about before, Brett had done a good job for us at different times during his tenure here, but we simply had missed too many makeable kicks, and Brett would be the first one to tell you that. We wish him nothing but the best, but excited to have Kai here. We know Kai from his rookie year. He was actually with us for a lot of his first year in the league, and his veteran kicker has made a lot of kicks in games, so excited to have him on board.
Was it pretty clear after you saw them kick that he was the guy you wanted to go with, that plus his history?
Yeah, again, I think each of the guys that have come in to kick for us have done a very good job, but we just felt best about Kai, his experience, his ability to kick and have success in games, certainly factored into it, but he kicked well in the workout, and we're excited to have him with our football team.
Perhaps the most savage, I was listening to our buddies on 105.3 The Fan, and they were reading a fan text in response to that response, and they said Jason's lost too many winnable games.
that's fair. I mean, honestly,
no lies told.
You've lost every, you know, honestly, when it comes down to, is it a winnable game and it's 50-50 shot, you've lost all those games this year. You're not winning really anything that's close down the stretch. And, you know, it's funny, that was the interesting thing to me is that you looked at last year. They won a lot of really close games. They won by a field goal against the Saints. They won last-second field goal against the Falcons on the road. They won by a touchdown in a tough game against Philadelphia. They were winning so many close games last year that seemed to show how tough they were and things like that, that it really is interesting to note that they can't win those games this year, and that does feel a little bit like, what's lacking then? Has the toughness gone away? Has the chemistry gone? I mean, as much as we kind of feel like Jason Garrett's probably got to go at this point, I think you also look at the way this chemistry is. I think this chemistry is kind of broken on this team.
I don't like reading too much into what players have to say.
I do. I love it.
I know you do. But I walked into the locker room today, and I see Michael Bennett, our spirited leader here in Dallas.
Michael Bennett talked to Jane and said more words to Jane than he has said, I would bet, to his wife in the entire time they've been married.
Well, he was more interested in the news cycle and the fact that I went viral for sharing a story about an ex-boyfriend, which I've talked enough about.
That was a brilliant tactic to get Michael to talk. That's why you shared that story.
Well, it didn't get him to open up, but I did say to him, can you at least give me your thoughts on the defense, how you turn this thing around, why this thing isn't working? He goes, I don't know. Ask the coaches. I don't want to read too much into it.
I mean, this is the guy who clearly felt strongly enough that he had to speak up after a game and felt there was something lacking.
He's such a savage. When you see him in pregame warmups, he's never working out right next to the team. Now, that's why it's always shocking when you see him sort of in the team huddle and getting fired up.
He is a loner.
He is a loner. He is off to himself.
But it's not even in the, like, Because we were kind of wondering that early on, like, is he just doesn't like his teammates? And, like, you just realize over time, like, oh, that's just kind of how he is. He kind of likes to, like, I guess he's just kind of like a lot of people, like, just want to be by themselves, like, don't bug me, don't talk to me. Like, he's just kind of...
It's got to be a little weird to come to a team this late in the season, especially after what you went through with the Eagles and then, of course, with the Patriots. And so I would imagine it's a little weird coming to a new team.
But I do think he's also relishing...
I like Michael Bennett.
I think he's also relishing that, you know, he gets to come in here and he gets to be the veteran with a Super Bowl ring that people kind of look at and go, oh, wow, that guy's won a Super Bowl. Like, I think there is, you know...
Do you think... I don't know if this is the type of team that picks his brain and ask him how you win a Super Bowl.
Not necessarily picks his brain, but I think they do clearly... I think players are clearly gravitating towards him, and that's why he's able to give those speeches, you know, pregame, and I think that's why people listen to him postgame. I think people listen to him. Maybe they're not seeking out and saying, what do we do to win a Super Bowl-wise, Sage? But, like, I mean, I think players do respect him, and I think he does come in here with a reputation that younger players respect. And I think that, you know, he wouldn't be asked to step up there and talk and give those speeches, and he is asked. I mean, not the one postgame. That was him just losing his mind on everybody because he, you know, felt that. But, you know, I think he's also probably feeling like he's getting near the end of his career. He said that. He said, I don't know, maybe I won't play football after this year. I can't tell you that. And I think that he senses that, you know, this is an opportunity that's slipping away, and I don't want to see that.
I don't watch tape. I don't have an eye for tape. I didn't play the game. What I do is ask questions. I try to key into their psyche. I talk to players in the locker room. But if there's one guy that watches a lot of tape, that knows a lot about football, it's this guy right here. We now welcome in one of my favorite guys that works at the NFL Network, NFL analyst Brian Baldinger. Of course, you'll know him from Baldy's Breakdowns, which is an amazing place to see a guy really break down sort of the ins and outs, the intricacies of the game. But he was also an offensive lineman for the Cowboys, the Colts, and the Eagles. Thank you so much for joining the show.
Well, it's my pleasure, James. Good to be with you today. Thank you.
Baldy, I got to ask you, I mean, these are some impressive breakdowns. For the fans, how do you decide which clips to go through, and how many hours do you spend on these breakdowns?
I spend a lot of hours, Jane. I spend a lot of hours just combing tape, but I like doing it, so it never feels like work to me. You know, the game keeps evolving, and so some teams evolve with it, some teams don't. And then when you really study it, I mean, you really find out a whole lot of things. You find out about effort. You find out about design. You find out about execution. It's all there, you know, and it's really how hard you want to look at it. Techniques, fundamentals are always important. And so, you know, everybody has stats and stats, you know, in this business, which is okay. But, you know, sometimes those stats don't really match up with what's really going on. And so you have to look a little bit deeper, and that's where the film study really comes in. So, I spend a lot of time doing it because I like it. And then, you know, because I do it, I feel like I keep learning every single week. So it always feels fresh to me.
Well, I always love when we're at training camp on NFL Network, I get paired with you from time to time. And this year was particularly interesting because we saw Kellen Moore installing this offense. And not only did we see some things that looked differently, but I remember a couple of your breakdowns at the beginning of the season, you really pointed out, look at some of these pre-snap motions. These are things that the Cowboys are doing differently. There was some success there. So, Brian, you've looked at all the tape. Why has there been a breakdown on offense?
Well, each game seems to be a little bit different. I mean, I think each game is kind of unique to itself. So if you just go to the most recent game, and a disappointing loss on Thursday night in Chicago, I mean, they had a nice 17-play, 75-yard drive. They converted four third downs in that drive to score. Now, those are rare. Those are nice. Nice to have them. But they're rare because there's all kinds of things that can happen that can derail 17 plays. I mean, negative plays, penalties, all those things come up. And so, you know, what happened was they didn't convert another third down in that game after that opening drive until the fourth quarter. And so they went, two and a half quarters without converting a third down. So if you're not converting third downs, Jane, you're either punting, you're attempting field goals. In the case of the Cowboys, you may be missing field goals. Or you might be going for it on fourth down, which is not a great percentage that the Cowboys, you know, have had this year, going 4-for-12 so far. So, yeah, they kind of, you know, your offense goes to the sideline and you try to regroup. Sometimes it's a three and out, but the result is you're not scoring points, and that's what happened against the Bears. I mean, unless you're just getting huge plays where you're just, which they're not getting a great deal of, but unless you're just getting big explosive plays, you know, you're not staying on the field, you're not sustaining offense right now. And it doesn't really matter who the designer of the offense is or what it looks like. You're not staying on the field frequently enough to be able to convert, you know, points on their drives.
Baldy, I'm curious, you know, there's always this discussion, particularly surrounding Jason Garrett. People always say, you know, his teams don't quit on him. What you've seen the last few weeks with the Cowboys struggling as much as they have, is this an instance of teams are just beating them down, you know, out-physicaling them, they're just beating them down on the football field? Or are you seeing any sort of quit from this team on film?
Well, I don't see quit. I mean, Tank Lawrence plays hard. He's just not having a great year. I mean, he's not really affecting the game. They paid him a lot of money to affect the game this year, to get the ball out of quarterback's hands, to force fumbles, and they're not doing those kind of things, to put pressure on quarterbacks on a regular basis where some challenged defensive backs might come up with a rare interception. Those things aren't happening. That's that. I mean, they're not tackling well. That's clear. I mean, they're fourth in the league right now in missed tackles. Now, there's all kinds. I mean, your own players. Leighton Vander Esch has talked about it throughout the season. Jalen Smith isn't having the type of year that he had last year. They're not tackling well. And, you know, if you don't tackle well, especially in the secondary, they always lead to big plays. That's where big plays that you surrender defensively always end up. They always end up either bad coverage or missed tackles on the back end. And they haven't tackled well on the back end this year.
Troy Aikman has talked about his desire to one day be a GM. And when you listen to the play-by-play, it seems like he's got some ideas. As a former player, as a guy that looks at all the film, if you were the GM, Brian, how would you fix this team?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you're kind of glued to a lot of players, and they've given some big, fat contracts to a lot of young players. Jalen Smith and DeMarcus Lawrence and, you know, Zeke Elliott, a bunch of offensive linemen. So then it becomes a question of how do you get better results out of what they do. Now, motivation is always good. Practice habits are good. All those things can always be improved. I mean, Rod Marinelli would tell you that. If you think you played hard enough, I'll show you how you can play harder. I mean, those things are staples. I don't know that they could go in with, whether they pay Dak Prescott or don't, I'm sure they're going to pay him. But, I mean, if he's your quarterback, it all starts with him. And his numbers look good. But really, if you look, you know, in key spots against the Jets and against the Vikings and, you know, in other games, you know, he hasn't played well in certain spots where Green Bay, where you fall deep in a hole. And so he's been very spotty. So you need to get, you know, more consistency. And that's the buzzword out of him. He's got to play bigger in bigger spots, you know, whether it's the Patriot game. I mean, you go through the list of all the games that you can go through in your head right now or chances to win games, and they're not making those kind of plays. That always kind of starts with the quarterback. Other teams around the league, whether it's Jimmy Garoppolo in San Francisco or Ryan Tannehill right now, I mean, these are short little windows here, but if you look at those players in big spots, they played real well this year. Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, late drive against the Saints on the road, big spot. He played really, really well in a big spot. And, you know, in big games this year, I would say that Dak hasn't played great in big games and big spots. He's got to play better.
When you look at what's going on defense, and this team is not playing as well on defense as they did last year, from what you see on tape, I mean, there are distinct differences between the Rod Marinelli Tampa 2 style of defense and the Chris Richard from the line of like Gus Bradley, Dan Quinn, and the Seattle concepts. Schematically right now, does this defense look more in practice like a Rod Marinelli defense or a Chris Richard defense?
I think they look more like a Rod Marinelli defense. I mean, just from a size standpoint alone. I mean, they're an undersized defensive line. And they struggle in that area. Now, if you're getting penetration and if you're winning with quickness and movement up front, you can cause problems. But, you know, right now, I don't think that, you know, they're not causing enough problems. I thought David Montgomery had a good game against them. You've seen teams gash, and you saw what the Rams did to him in the playoff game last year. If you look at Seattle and the way they're built much bigger up front. And if you look at their defensive tackles and the size of their defense lines, it's a different size up front than what, you know, Malik Collins is and Antoine Woods is and some of the guys they play inside. They play, you know, Michael Bennett inside a great deal. which is not a bad thing. I mean, he's played that style in Seattle before, but, you know, I think if you said, you know, what, if you just, to answer your question, I think they resemble more of what Rod Marinelli has coached in the past, whether it's Tampa or Detroit or other places he's been.
So I ask you this question, Brian, because hope remains alive here, believe it or not, in Frisco, just because of the way the standings are with the Eagles right now, that the Cowboys can still get into the playoffs. We saw what is going to be an amazing rematch in the playoffs, the 49ers and the Saints on Sunday. Do the Cowboys give you any reason to believe, from a coaching perspective and a player perspective, that they could get past either one of those teams and make a run deep in the playoffs?
Well, I mean, look, they played the Saints this year, and, you know, offensively they were challenged. I mean, Zeke had a bad game, but I give credit, you know, to what the New Orleans Saints did. They won the line of scrimmage that day. Defensively, they played probably one of their best games all year in that game. So I would say, look, they went to New Orleans and they went toe-to-toe. Offensively, they were challenged. They've been challenged a bunch, you know, in the last 3 weeks. So do I have confidence? I think if they played the Saints right now, I think they'd feel a little bit better than if they played the 49ers. I mean, the 49ers look like all they're doing is just getting better and better to me. And they've overcome every one of their obstacles they've had this year. But the answer right now, James, the way that the Cowboys are playing, I don't have any confidence that they could beat either one of those teams in a playoff game. But I'll say this. Habits can change in an instant. I mean, you can stop smoking today if you want to stop smoking today, and you could have smoked for 30 years. I mean, I've seen the Eagles 2 years ago go on a run in the playoffs, and they looked terrible the last 2 weeks of the season. There was no reason to believe, after losing on Christmas Eve to the Raiders, losing to the Cowboys the following week, that they could beat anybody. And so, but they did, and they got hot at the right spot. And so things can change, but looking at the way the Cowboys are playing right now, they're not playing well individually. There's a lot of players that I think they should expect better performances from than what they're getting, and they're not playing well as a team. That can change, though, in the last 3 weeks of the season, and it has to change. And the eye test is the first test. I mean, you'll know if they're playing better this week against the Rams.
Brian, I always enjoy your breakdowns for our fans here on the Boys and Girl Podcast. If you're not familiar with it, go to @BaldyNFL. Also, give them a plug for your Instagram, Baldy.
Yeah, you know, just BaldyNFL is my Instagram, and you can hashtag me and Baldy's breakdowns, and you can look at somebody who gets really excited about talking about the game of football on a daily basis.
I love it. And I also love that amazing Karate Kid headband you wear with Baldy's breakdowns. I need to talk to you about where I can get one of those, Baldy.
You can go to Kenson Creations. There's a Facebook page, Kenson, K-E-N-S-O-N, Kenson Creations, K-R-E-A-T-I-O-N-S. I know it's a spelling error, but Kenson Creations on Facebook. And you can order away and they'll be out, you know, the next day.
I'm rocking one to the beach this summer. I appreciate you so much, Baldy. Always awesome stuff, and we'll catch you down the line.
Okay, Jane, you got it. Anytime. Thank you.
All right, so it doesn't sound like Baldy, while he thinks that you can change habits, you know, I've often found that, yes, you can slim down if you go on the keto diet, but a lot of times you're going to go right back to eating that processed food. I think all of us are sort of in agreement around here based on who we've talked to and sort of the vibe of this facility that they're looking to move on. Of course, I had that report from a very good source that Stephen Jones had recently talked with Urban Meyer. Jerry Jones was asked about that on 105.3 The Fan this week.
I got to say, though, I think that that's probably just showing respect for Jason Garrett. I think that's mainly what Jerry's doing there. But that we haven't gotten a chance really to jump into this because the last time we did an episode was last Wednesday. It was before the Bears game. And, of course, after the Bears game, you did report that there were three names you actually had and that it was Urban had talked to Stephen Jones and that they had remained highly interested in Lincoln Riley.
Which who just won at AT&T Stadium.
Just won at AT&T Stadium. And props to Brian Broaddus. When we asked him, remember, we said, what name would you throw? He said, well, I know, I feel like they really like Lincoln Riley, but a name that makes sense to me is Urban Meyer. And then, boom, it was perfect timing there. He called those two. But then you had the third one that I think caught everybody off guard. That was Tony Elliott, the co-offensive coordinator at Clemson.
I still believe him to be a long shot. I think he's intriguing. But I just, my sense is their real interest, and especially that answer from Jerry, tells you if you're going to look in one direction, I'm circling Urban right now.
And it makes a lot of sense. I mean, one of the things that you remember Brian was saying why he thought Urban would make sense is because, you know, the Cowboys may want to bring in somebody to push him over the top, but they still want somebody who can kind of, hey, take these. We still like some of our assistants here. We'd like you to take these. And Urban, being away from coaching, maybe just wants to step in, coach in the NFL. He may be willing to do that a little bit. But one of the exciting things, honestly, about Urban Meyer, and Urban has his warts, there's no doubt about it, but Urban has actually talked about, you know, people always go, why can't you get Tony Pollard more involved? Why can't you do this, this? This was actually about 10, 11 years ago. He was given a coaching clinic when he was coaching at the University of Florida, and he was talking about why you have to get your best players the football.
Okay, we happen to have this kid named Percy Harvin, who was absolutely dynamic. The guy can play, man. He's fast, fastest player I've ever coached, getting the ball. When I was at Notre Dame one time, we finished the game. We lost to Nebraska. After that game, Nebraska was ranked number one. A guy named David Givens came up to me sobbing. And he said, Coach, I said, holy shit, you all right? And he's bawling his eyes out. And I said, you're going to be all right. He said, you don't understand, Coach. And I said, yeah, I understand. We lost the number one ranked team in the country. Should have beat them. He goes, you don't understand. I said, what? And he says, I didn't touch the ball the entire game. From that point on, it was like an epiphany. Something happened on that day. He said, that will never happen. If you got a guy that can play, Percy Harvin, if you're going to play us next year, he's going to touch it 20 to 25 times a game. He will do that. How do you do that? Well, you're not going to throw 25 hitches, or you're not going to throw slants and all that. We're not. So we're going to hand it to him. If you watch the SEC championship game, we did a bunch of stuff. That kid's going to that counterplay with him running it, that looked really good. We have other guys that don't run counters very well, and they're called tailbacks. So we put him at tailback motion. We did a lot of stuff with him.
So, good perspective. I mean, that's something I think Cowboys fans have been demanding, is somebody who will get your playmakers the ball. And that's something that sometimes the Cowboys coaching staff currently doesn't do well enough.
Well, and I really want to deep dive, as we're running out of time here, of course, on our next podcast. We are going to preview this Rams game with one of my coworkers, Omar Ruiz of the NFL Network. But I also want to dive into this idea of Troy Aikman, the GM, and why I was so fascinated by this, that has picked up steam and Jerry Jones seemingly had absolutely no idea about, even though I can tell you from personal experience, he reads, hears, and knows everything. As he even admitted, as the GM, nothing gets done around here without Jerry signing off on it. There is nothing that gets said out there without Jerry hearing it. But we'll deep dive into that one on the next podcast. I really have some interesting thoughts on that, and so is Aikman.
Troy sure is talking like a guy who's angling for something a little bit. Even I think it was today he tweeted, you know, about what it takes to win. And in my experience, there aren't enough people who really have what it takes to win. They think they do, but they don't know. It's like he sure is talking like somebody who's angling for a gig.
But this may not be the gig that you get if you continue telling the person that currently has that gig that they've done such a terrible job.
No, but, you know, Don Van Natta from ESPN, who's done biographies on Jerry Jones, knows him really well, had said something recently during a game when Troy was critical. He tweeted out, he said, Troy's being very critical of Jason Garrett right now. He said, there aren't a lot of people that really make Jerry sit up and listen. He goes, Troy Aikman is somebody that Jerry sits up and listens, and Jerry values his opinion.
As Jerry typically tells us, he's earned the right.
He has.
For whatever situation it may be, Troy Aikman has certainly earned the right around here, as it applies to the Cowboys, to at least have an opinion about how to get a team to win a championship.
Also, real quickly before we go here, just got to give a quick shout out to our friends at Rode. That's what we're recording this podcast on today, is the Rodecaster Pro. Thanks so much to them for helping us out with that. If you're looking for anything to take your podcast to the next level, you got to check one of these out, the Rodecaster Pro. That's R-O-D-E.
Thanks for tuning in to this edition of the Boys and Girl Podcast. We're looking forward to our next one that will drop for you on Saturday morning.